Hello and welcome to the first regular scheduled talk, at least ours. You might be by the opening ceremony already. We are Stephen Murdoch from Cambridge and Maximilian Donzai from Aachen, and we'll give you an overview over hidden data and internet published documents. That's basically things we found on the web which shouldn't be there. It will be a lot of pictures to browse to and other things. So let's go ahead. The whole problem of hidden data and documents is that we all use software we don't understand and trust. And that's not only MS Office. I use emacs, and I think I know a lot about emacs, but I don't understand what's happening in there all the time. And we have a lot of software where this is the case. And this software generates very complex data formats. Sometimes we are not supposed to understand this data format. A good example is, again, MS Office, but also other formats which are meant to be not understood and used as a force in the market, because people are locked in to this data format. But there are other data formats which are even public and published, but they are so complex we are not willing to understand them. A good example is the electronic data exchange used in financial applications, which is mostly open standards, but terribly complex. On the train here to Berlin, I met a guy who does weather data processing, and they are just using for the simple temperature data, incredible complex format, which was designed 150 years ago and was designed to use minimal space on a telegraph. And they are still suffering from this code nowadays. And we have nowadays massive exchange of documents in this complex format. We don't just use plain text for communicate, but we send via email or via chat, instant messaging, whatever, enormously amounts of this complex documents. So basically, in these documents we don't understand but still give away to others, there's a lot of space for data we don't have in there, or like computer scientists like to call covert channels, which are a very hard problem to come by. So, first, who we are. Stephen is from the Cambridge Security Group. If you don't know it, you have been living under a rock. They came up with incredible cool stuff. They basically are the academic hacking force, an inspiration to to all other academics interested in that. They created one of the AES finalists for the crypto algorithm. They do the only real open publications about Tempest and stuff like that. They break ATM machines, or at least the security modules. They come up with really a lot of stuff. If you don't know them, browse their web pages and be in awe. I'm myself from the Laboratory for Dependable Distributed Systems at RWTH Aachen University. We are not that cool, but that's only because we are so young. We were founded a year ago, and work in theoretical topics, but also in practical topics. And at least the main topics I'm into is security education. So bring students to a level where when they go to industry, create secure code and even make insecure code more secure. Honeypot technology, my primary research interest in honeypot technology is to prove that honeypots are useless. And sensor networks. Notable classes we have include, and now bear with the uncool names, the hacker seminar, the hacker practicum, the pen test practicum, and our summer school applied IT security, where we try to bring together young researchers over Europe to research more in offensive security. If you think these names like hacker practicum are bad, the press release of the university on a recent thing we did in a capture the flag contest was Aachen students are very good at offensive in anti-hacker thingies. So offensive anti-hacker, whatever. So hacker must be in there because of marketing. If you're interested in what we are doing or willing, for example, to attend the next summer school this 2005, next year, you might be interested in our announce mailing list, which is on this URL. We try to bring some work surprisingly fell, but it works well. While there's a JPEG standard, there are a lot of different formats to write JPEG to a file. There's this GIF and another one with VFs in a different place and EXIF and all the stuff. But EXIF seems to be the standard way of store headers. It's especially used by digital cameras to put additional information about time and exposure and lens and whatever, GPS information, the good cameras already put in there too. And applications are meant to leave unknown EXIF headers untouched. So if an application doesn't care about the thumbnail, it should leave the thumbnail in there untouched. And so we can expect this problem to be quite widespread. This is just a short example. I run the file command on 100 EXIF, 100 JPEG files I had on my hard disk, and within this 100 files, I already found six different versions and kinds of JPEG on the hard disk. Okay, so while I was talking in the summer school that this problem might be widespread and we don't know, Stephen came up with an idea to just find out if it is. So download as many pictures as possible from the internet, that's the easy part, and then find out if there's a difference between the thumbnail images and the originals, and Stephen will now describe how he found out.
So we used a slightly modified version of the crawl so that it downloads the HTTP headers for fingerprinting, which was another project in the summer school. And for every image, we first of all compared the image proportions because that's fast, and it turned out to be quite reliable because what will typically happen is someone will take the photo on a digital camera. The digital camera will store the thumbnail so it can display it in the LCD screen without having to rescale it inside the camera, which has quite a small microprocessor. And later on, it's cropped, and in almost all cases, it will be cropped. I don't think this microphone, it's on. And we can detect a crop even if it's only one pixel, because that wouldn't happen unless it's been modified. But in some cases, the proportions aren't changed. That's typically when it's not from a digital camera, the thumbnail is being generated by something else. And in that case, we compare the image contents, which is a lot less reliable. So the way we compare the proportion, I tried a variety of methods, but the one that's most reliable is scale the full-size image down to the same size as the thumbnail so that the larger dimensions are equal, and then compare the smaller size. This should be zero, but depending on the rounding method that my Python program uses or whatever generated image, this could be plus or minus one. And if it is above that, then I flag it. When I did this, I noticed that a common modification was to rotate the image because a digital camera doesn't do that automatically and it's done later on. So if the proportions of the main image is the reciprocal of the proportion of the thumbnail, then I try rotating it 90 degrees. And then there's the image content. What I do is I take the scaled version from calculating proportions, and for the purposes of speed, because we were talking about 10,000 images, I use the nearest interpolation method. That's where you just throw away all the pixels you don't need. In more modern image manipulation software, it will use some kind of interpolation, linear or bicubic. And then I subtract one image from another and then calculate the root mean squared of all the pixels over this. This works as well as anything else. It's probably not optimal, but I use the Pi image suite for modifying, for calculating these, and this is one of the operations that that's implemented in C and is very efficient. And then for some cases, I think the image is rotated, so then I'll rotate it one way and the other, and then compare that and see if it's better, and then I'll take the minimum of all of those. So what I get from the output of that Python program is a list of all the image file names, the difference in proportion, and the RMS difference. But it wasn't quite clear initially what to set the criteria of what images are actually different. So I made the files that readable into GNU-R, which is a statistics program, and calculated various properties over that. The one that worked best was a histogram, and I tried to find out if there's any steep jumps in either criteria. And once I had a rough idea, then I extracted the images that were most likely to be thumbnails and split them into non-interesting and interesting manually, and then calculated the histogram of one set and the other set and tried to find out what the difference was. And by far the most reliable thing was the proportion. If it's greater than 2 pixels, then it's almost certainly different in some way. And the RMS difference is actually quite large. The main reason is the cameras will use a different interpolation method to what I used. And this is, well, I'll come on to that later. And this generated quite a lot of false positives. Because of the interpolation method, the images that had sharp edges caused a phase difference when you converted it to the smaller version, because it might have the interpolation might be different on the camera than what I used, and this causes some problems, so I had to manually filter those out. And the other problematic one was some software, or possibly digital cameras, rather than scaling the main image down to the thumbnail, it scales it and then adds black bars or white bars at the top and the bottom. And there wasn't any sensible way to filter this out initially, because what you wanted to do was identify what is a black bar or what is a white bar, essentially something with low entropy. And this would be more time consuming than any of the other tests, and would probably dramatically increase the runtime, which is already several errors. So it wasn't so much of a problem, so I decided not to do that initially.
Okay, this is an example, one of the software on a smaller set of images. I think our full set of images is now 1.2 million images. And the software is still quite fast, using 0.02 seconds per image. We generally find about 19%, and this figure stays quite the same for different sets of images, of the images to have thumbnails, and about 9% of the thumbnails to be interesting in the way that they differ from the original images by the criteria we set to understand, to distinguish them. So our question is how to screen thousands of images, and we thought you could do that. We created something like Hot or Not, And you can say if there are visible differences, if there are no visible differences, if the differences are quite boring, if somebody just cropped away a piece of the sky, or if they are extremely interesting because somebody cropped away his girlfriend or stuff like that. Well, I'll have the URL in the end again. So now a little showcase of what we found. Oops, wrong direction. One very usual thing is where people remove their friends or their ex-friends or something like that. Or in whole groups, they remove a single person. Another group is where you very nicely can see where the image is stolen from. For example, on the top left, the guy who is obviously out of the Troy homepage or something like that. The pirates, which are out of a newspaper article. If you look to the lower right hand there, it isn't possible to see that good. On the green bordered picture, that is a thumbnail, there's at the bottom the copyright notice of this image, which is removed in the red bordered version, but then again, on the red bordered version, there's some information we added for our screening process, so it looks somewhat like if there still is the information. We have a lot of images like the ones at the top, where basically there was some text under the image which is cropped away. And a very funny one is where somebody obviously liked the font used by Fujifilm and made of picture your solutions as an image. Another example is this one. This one looks really cool and might be a cool graphic artist did that, but then again, he just stolen it from a computer game cover. So the big one is the thumbnail, scaled very big here, and therefore doesn't look that good, but you still get an idea where it comes from. Then that's the real problem with that, where people want to hide their identity, they want to publish pictures on the web, but don't want people to recognize them, so they crop them to show just the eyes or stuff like that. But if the thumbnail contains the whole person, this doesn't work out. That's another example. People really like to put their eyes in. On the web pages, these are some other examples. There's a lot of stuff of these out there on the internet. So this image might even be illegal in many countries. Everything where there are naked children, this is child porn and prohibited. So you could say, oh, these children aren't technically naked. But there's a thumbnail in the image and there are naked children in the image. So this might be illegal child porn in the UK or Australia or other countries which are quite strict about that. And you might be prosecuted for spreading it if you just made around pictures of the smiling faces of your children. There's a quite interesting case in, I think, New Zealand?
Yeah.
In New Zealand, where the police mailed out images of abused children to, I think, all the school heads of the country. Do you know this little children? And they cropped the image too, to just mail around the faces, but the thumbnail contained the whole abuse situation, which is bad. And you might think that thumbnails are really tiny and that nothing can be seen, but I think this example's prove you wrong. Even if they have a low resolution, you can distinguish faces and so on. And we found thumbnails up to a resolution of 300 by 300 pixels, which was a good image format 10 years ago. We might consider that high resolution by then. This is a really privacy violation out of a weblog, a cropped image. So that's a promised porn, this two pictures before. We also see a lot of photoshopping where the thumbnail contains the original image and the the original image, or the final image is very different. These are cases where we see no relation between the thumbnail and the image itself. Very interesting are the ones on the right top, where three thumbnails all contain this old lady, and the three images contain different people. And in the middle, at the bottom, you might say, oh, both images are 60s girls at the beach. But then again, there are different persons in there. Other cases are where there's quite extreme cropping. With this picture, I'm not really sure if it has been cropping because the thumbnail is low resolution. But it seems to me that this is a very tiny piece of a bigger picture, so put it on the right position, and then put the picture there. I have no idea why people use this picture to get a face. We have a class of where cropping is used to hide pictures of pictures, which is quite fun too. So basically, this is a picture of a picture. And this is a picture of a conference, seemingly. If it's smaller on your screen, you can read it better. It seems there are chairs, and this is a picture on a video beamer. This is a picture from a stack of pictures. I think a junior hacker. This is an example where I think the cropped image doesn't give you that many hints what was the original image. I would have to guess what's that. It could be a quiz in a newspaper, you know, what's on that image. But if we look at the thumbnail, you see, oh, it's a sneaker. No problem. Then we see really, really photoshopping where people modified stuff. For example, out of this nice picnic place, somebody created a dark, mysterious place with somebody in there. So the picnic place was the thumbnail, and this was the image from the thumbnail. Here's somebody obviously wanted to look his bedroom or something like that quite normal, and removed his real master control computer in the original, or the other way around, something like that. There are a lot of photoshopping going on, for example, where people remove the background, or where people like on the lower left side are too lazy to make a Halloween costume, so they photoshop it on themselves. It's very interesting. We see, seemingly in the real world, the Spaceship One was flown by a golem on the left side. But was retouched out afterwards, or the other way around again. On the right side, you see the plane. The thumbnail shows that the plane is followed by a UFO, the little black dot. But they removed the black dot. Oh, and can't you see it because the size doesn't fit? There's something following the plane, and in the real image, they removed that or cropped that away. On the other hand, it must be dirt on the camera. This is interesting. It seems to be some scientific observation or something like that. And in the original image, there are two dots, stars, whatever. But in the thumbnail, there's only one, the lower one. So it might be that the upper one wasn't, or the middle one, it wasn't bright enough to show up in the thumbnail. Or it might be that somebody just painted it in there because it was convenient for his observation or whatever. There's an interesting class of pictures where the thumbnail shows less than the original image. I suspect that's because the firmware of cameras, for example, still goes for 4 to 3 dimensions in any case, even if the camera records bigger images or something like that. Okay, so some references on that. There's an article by Simon Biles, Scalable Exploitation of and Response to Information Leakage. He basically crawled the internet for Word documents and documented a lot of the incidents and also the PDF stuff, it's good stuff. The article was republished in the IEEE Security and Privacy, but you can download it from his homepage for free. There's this presentation together with the software we use to, the patches to the crawler and the software we use to find the interesting thumbnails. There's also links to older presentations which contain more information on Word documents. And at the URL at the bottom, you can do our hot or not game to find between 80% boring or 90% boring images the interesting thumbnails and the juicy ones. Okay, I really encourage you to go to that URL because you can surf the internet and help science. Thank you all very much for listening. And we'll be available outside for questions.